to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, February 10th, 2014, and you are listening to episode 89. My name is Rob. With me, as always, Jason.
Good evening, Rob.
This is my nightly news intro. Yeah, was that okay?
I felt like the 60 minutes thing should have been on
there. Yeah, right. Was that all right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fun little way to change it up there, you know?
Or you could have been like, over at the sports desk, my friend Jason.
That would have been funnier. Late now, though. Missed the opportunity.
Yeah. Happens a lot.
No going back. I miss a lot. You're saying I miss a lot of opportunities? Wow, you're a jerk.
You walked right into that one.
I did. It's true. I'm drinking beer.
You are.
Yeah. I'm drinking Founders. Founders is up in Grand Rapids, right?
It is.
Yeah. They're Dirty Bastard Scotch Style Ale. You know, I haven't had this too often. I like it a lot. I it's not my first choice usually, but it's nice to try it again. And I don't know if I've said this in the show yet or not. I think I have. My wife and I are taking a trip to England and Scotland this summer.
Yeah. You are.
And so I've been thinking that I need to start drinking more Scottish alcohol.
Yes.
You know, so I can get a taste for it.
Get prepared.
Right. I've never really had a good taste for Scotch.
Also eat some haggis.
Yeah, lots of haggis. I'm more of a bourbon and Irish whiskey kind of guy. I don't generally drink Scotch whiskey, but I need to practice. And I think starting with Scottish style ales, it's probably a good way to go.
It's not bad. Yeah, I have to say my favorite thing from Founders is actually they have one they don't make as much of, I don't think. I haven't seen it as often. Dirty Bastard's the popular one, but it's called Backwoods Bastard. And instead of a Scotch ale, it's a bourbon ale.
Yeah, and I haven't had that one.
And I like that one better. I like bourbon and whiskey ales a little better than Scotch ales. So, because Dragon's Milk is probably my favorite.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, Dragon's Milk is spectacular.
And we had one of those downstairs, but you decided not to drink it.
So you could be drink sober. Your last Dragon's Milk.
Plus, you wanted to be, you know.
Well, I'm home.
Yeah. The quality of the show will go very well downhill.
Yeah, I just didn't want to drink your last one. You were so nice to bring beer over.
I know. I'm a good guy like that.
You are. So I still owe you lunch.
I always have beer in my house. Plenty of it. If you've seen my Twitter handle, it tells you that my mom says I tweet about beer too much. True story.
Nice.
I actually haven't tweeted about beer as much as of recently.
No, we've been focused on games.
So.
Oh, dude, did you hear the most amazing news? Okay? The most amazing news. It is spectacular. Okay? OG, original gangsta, Duke Nukem 3D. Is being re-released with online multiplayer.
Wow.
How amazing is that?
Wow.
How awesome is that? That is so great. Like, Duke Nukem 3D was my game when I was in high school. That was like...
That was my jam, yo!
Yes, it was the hottest thing that ever existed. You listeners, you know what I'm talking about, right? You were just like the perfect age, like 16 years old. Duke Nukem 3D comes out, you know, your mom doesn't know what she's buying you at the store, you know,
and it's like one of the most terrible games ever.
Right, yeah, so offense. I mean, it's tame by today's standards, but you know, back in the day, this would have been like, what, 90, was it 94, 95?
It was early.
Yeah. And that came out, it was amazing. But the only way you could play multiplayer was to network your computer, you know, so you haul your computer over to your buddy's house.
Yeah, and back then it wasn't easy to do that.
Man, and it was a blast, but it was a big ordeal. Now, if I can play that online, oh my God. I can't wait.
That'd be pretty cool.
I'm so excited. Anyway, this is not a show about video games.
Especially not ones from the 90s.
20-year-old video games. Yeah. This is a show about tabletop games.
Yeah. Tabletop games.
Yeah.
Son.
Yeah.
You just keep saying yeah. That was pretty. I really want to punch you in the face.
Strange. Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes our listeners, I just have to think they're
so patient with us.
Roll their eyes, bash their face into the keyboard.
So what's new with you?
I don't know. Stuff.
You know what sucks? Gen Con housing registration.
Oh, man. I want to punch all the faces. Seriously, I just...
Beat.
I can't think of another thing in this world that makes me as mad as registering for Gen Con housing.
Yes.
And I get it. There's a lot of people that want housing, right?
Right.
This year, so spoiler alert, we got the room at the embassy that we wanted.
Right.
And so a lot of people don't see at the embassy.
Well, it's not the one that we want. It's the one we always end up with.
Right. The one we want has two beds. In the bedroom and then has a pullout on the sofa.
Right.
Instead, this one has a king size in the bedroom, right. And then one of us ends up sleeping on the sofa, which is far less comfortable.
Yeah.
And if you have to actually pull the sofa out into the sleeper sofa thing style, it's terrible. Like, it was so bad.
You might as well just beat your head on the wall because you're not going to sleep.
And we take turns. So, like,
right.
Every year we swap. Well, last year, my wife was there and so was yours. Mm-hmm. You guys had the sofa last year. It was so bad that you closed it. You slept in the chair, and she slept on the closed-up couch.
Right. The first night, we tried to make it through the whole night on the pullout, and it was awful. And the second night, we didn't even try.
Right.
I just curled up, sitting in a chair upright.
Yeah.
And slept about half the night.
Still better than you did.
Still better laying down on that horrible pullout.
I think I might actually bring an air mattress to show that way. If I need to pull it out, I can set it on top
of
that.
That's probably a good idea.
But anyway, so the reason we're so keen on the embassy, really, it's changed for reasons over the years. It used to be because they gave away lots of free booze and free breakfast. Mm-hmm. Still really in it for the free breakfast. Sometimes we drink a little of the free booze, but it's kind of at an awkward time during the day, so we don't always get down there.
Right.
But the big thing is they have, like, you have a bedroom and then you have a living room.
Right.
And for us to do the in-room recordings that we do that have become kind of popular and people really like and we love and... to do those, we really need some space to spread out.
So it's nice to have that separate living room area.
So end of the story here, we got it.
Mm-hmm.
But the way it went down just is so frustrating.
Yeah.
First of all, right at noon, it popped up right on time, which is good because they're not always on time.
Mm-hmm.
So it launched right at noon. It was great until we started trying to do anything.
Anything.
And then it uses this passkey system, so it puts you into a queue,
mm-hmm.
and then you wait, and you wait. And so I'm in my office at work, and you're in your office, and we're on the phone together
mm-hmm.
so that we can make sure we're, you know, and it's good we were, because I would have been really stressing out if we hadn't been because of how this ended.
Right.
So it finally pops up about the same time, because we got in the queue about the same time. We get out of the queue at the same time. We both see embassy. Neither one sees double bed, so we both click on it. We're going through the embassy stuff. I get all registered. You get all registered. We get to the end and almost about the same time we click sit, go. And mine pops up and says, you took too long. Basically it says, you took too long. This is expired. Sorry mm-hmm. about your luck.
Page timed out.
Page timed out. But we were in there for the same amount of time, which I would say was less than 3 minutes.
You got in there before I did. Or no.
I think I was in like a couple seconds before and out a couple seconds before. But
right.
It was less than 3 minutes total.
Yeah, total.
I mean, it might have been less than 2 minutes. I mean, I typed in my name, my address, my credit card number, and hit go.
And it failed.
And luckily, we were on the phone. You were like, I got it. I just got a confirmation number. And then a couple minutes later, you got an email.
Yeah.
So I didn't even book anything. Normally, you end up with two rooms, and then we end up just giving one to a friend.
Right.
Because there's always people that want rooms at the embassy.
We didn't even get that this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Total crap. Total nonsense. And actually, the queue was crappy, but it actually worked okay for me this year, better than it has in the past.
Last year where it gave you the wrong hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
You picked a hotel and it put you in another one.
Right.
Which
and it didn't even tell me that it was a different hotel until it sent me the confirmation.
And I'm confident that you did not pick the wrong hotel because you're not an idiot.
Right. Yeah. But then looking at Twitter, the backlash, everybody freaking out. Apparently it was a horrible disaster. And my understanding was that Gen Con got a little crappy with their you know, fans about it. Somebody retweeted something saying about how Gen Con said that people are acting like this is a Chicken Little scenario. You know, okay, you don't compare your fans who spend tens of thousands of dollars to go to your event every year to Chicken Little.
It's millions, Rob, but
each, you know.
Yeah, I mean, people spend $1,000 each a lot of times to go to Gen Con.
You're right. Total is millions. Many millions of dollars are brought to your company and to this city. And you don't make fun of them.
And we have a long-standing history with Gen Con.
Yeah.
Somewhat jaded, which we've talked about before and we won't get into, but we know who the guy is who runs it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say his name. He knows who he is.
Everybody out there, you know who he is.
Yeah. I don't like that guy.
Yeah.
He's kind of smarmy. Mm-hmm. He's kind of annoying. And I just feel like he doesn't care about, I mean, I don't know what their net profit is on Gen Con, but I can do some math just based on averages, and I can figure out what their gross take is. And their gross take is in the high millions. I mean, I don't know if it's 10 million, but it's mm-hmm. it's probably over 5.
Yeah.
And it's a big event, and it takes a lot. But mm-hmm. remember, people, that this event is run primarily by volunteers who are given a free badge, and if they worked long enough, maybe they got to share a room with 3 other people.
Yeah.
That, of course, Gen Con got a huge discount.
Right.
Plus, to be nice, Gen Con also charges you to go to events, even though you paid $70 for a badge. Yep. And I know that other conventions
it's $80 this year.
It was $80 with shipping, wasn't it? I think it was $80
to get shipped. Oh, yeah, okay.
Because they charge you $10 to ship it to your house.
Right, $10 to ship a piece of paper to your house to ship it.
Right, yeah. There's some handling charges in there. Yeah. But anyways, and I know that there are, from what I've heard, like PAX East is like way worse than this and stuff. And,
yeah.
But, you know, it's just frustrating because there's so much low-hanging fruit with things they could just do slightly better and show people that they care a little more, and they don't. And we're not like, oh, we're not going to Gen Con. We're always going to go to Gen Con.
And here's the reason why for that. Because we say how much we love Gen Con. What we love is we love the event. We love going to that place with all of those people who also are coming there just to play games, to spend time with fun people, to talk to people, hang out, to see all the different publishers that are bringing games. That's what we love about Gen Con. What we hate is Gen Con LLC, the company that has created this event. That company should be ashamed of themselves for a lot of things.
Right.
Yeah. But the event, everything that happens around the event that they facilitate is spectacular.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's an amazing event. There's nothing like it that I've been to, probably that I'll ever go to.
Maybe if we start going to PAXes, we might feel differently. Maybe PAX can compare. Maybe if we went to like San Diego Comic Con or something.
Well, San Diego Comic Con, I'm sure, is bigger, but it's a different thing.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, this is for game conventions. This is kind of the mecca for everybody. And I mean, at least in the U.S. There's always like Essen, but you know, who's got money for that? People do, because we know tons of people that go to Essen.
Not us, though.
Yeah, it's not us. So it's just frustrating. And I feel comfortable venting about this, because it's not like they gave us press passes.
No, right.
We don't apply, because we're banned. Listen to some old shows, and you can find out why.
Right. HoboCon.
So, anyways, So, I don't know, we probably could get away with applying for press passes, and I almost want to, just to be a jerk, just so that the press lady, who still works there, because I still see her name on stuff, and I know that she hates us.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if they'd recognize our names.
Dude, I'm sure they would.
Yeah, they probably would.
I mean, we were on a watch list with them.
Yeah.
I don't want to use the term like it's like we were terrorists, but I mean, we were on a list to where they knew who we were by name.
Mm-hmm.
And by face.
Right.
At a distance, when we were standing in line with about 100 other people.
Yeah.
I didn't even make it up to the counter to try and get my free badge. They just told me that I could leave.
Yeah.
So, you know what? It's whatever. I mean, that's not why we dislike Gen Con. In fact, the fact that Gen Con still lets us go, we like Gen Con for that.
Yeah.
Because that could have ended differently. But it's just frustrating to see. It's hard to believe that Gen Con cares about their fans. I think that the people that work for Gen Con love the event. I think they like going to the event.
Mm-hmm.
I think they feel like the people are just kind of a necessary evil for the event. At least that's how it feels. I think that's how
how they treat us, yeah.
So,
anyway, that's probably enough venting about that.
But anyways, hey, we're going to Gen Con. We're super excited.
Yes.
Because we love Gen Con as an event.
Mm-hmm.
So...
There you go.
Yeah, that's our little vent thing we wanted to get out.
That's enough.
So...
Right. What you been playing?
I played a couple, like I said last time, I was going to talk about a couple more games that I played
At Unpub.
At Unpub.
Great.
The first is a published game that I got to play, and it was the first time I ever played it. It was the Spiel des Jahres winner last year, in 2013, It's called Hanabi.
Isn't it Spiel des Jahres?
I've heard it pronounced both ways.
All right.
I'm an American. I live in America, so I say Spiel des Jahres.
There you go.
Spiel des Jahres.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm drinking my dirty bastard.
So anyways, so Hanabi though, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you a little funny story about Hanabi before I got to play.
So, I've heard this story. It's funny.
This is good. I was talking to Andy and Jason, and I was like, we were talking about, Jason had a deduction game called... Dead Drop that I played that was super fun. It's like a micro deduction game about spies. Mm-hmm. Good time. And we were playing that. I was like, it'd be cool if there was like a game, like a deduction game where you held the cards facing your opponents. Like everybody else could see the cards, but you couldn't. And then I'm like, and I said that. And then Andy Lennox is like, oh yeah. And then like, you could do this and that. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, wow, man, you just won the Spiel des Jahres. And I was like, what? And he's like, that's Hanabi. And I'd never heard of that before. Like, I've heard the name Hanabi before.
Right, right.
I had no idea what it was about. Yeah. And I actually didn't know it was the winner last year because I don't pay attention, apparently. The next night, AJ Porfirio was there, and we were hanging out, and he had a copy of it.
Oh, cool.
Like, you guys want to play this? And I was like, absolutely, because I designed it. my favorite game that I designed when I won the award. So we played it, and basically this is how the game works. Hanabi means fireworks, and you're trying to put on a fireworks show.
Okay.
It's very abstract, but there's fireworks theme kind of tacked onto it. Does not matter at all.
Hmm.
There are five colors of cards. Each one is numbered. Each one has cards numbering 1 through 5. That has multiples of the lower numbers, but then like 5, there's only one. The object of the game, it's a co-op game, is to play all the cards, like to play out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and all colors. And you can have all the ones out at once, all the twos, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You can have 5 separate piles to start with. Sounds really easy, right? Here's the catch. The cards are facing away from you. You don't know what cards you have. You only know what cards your opponents have. And you can't say, these are the cards you have. You have to spend a clue point. You've got like only so many on the board. They're little tokens that are two-sided.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to you, Rob, these two cards are ones. And then I would flip over a clue thing. And then you'd be like, okay. And you'd shuffle your cards around so that you knew these ones are ones, right? And however, I mean, some of the ways I've seen people hold the cards is just hilarious to me.
So you're not, those are both ones, but one might be blue and one might be red.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I can't just say, this is a one or this is a red card. I have to say, here's all the ones, here's all the reds, here's all the, but the kind of the unspoken rule is if I tell you what a card is and it's not obvious that you can't play it, I'm probably telling you because you should play it, right? That's kind of like when somebody gets a five, you say, that's a five because you don't want them to throw away a five because you can't get a perfect score, okay. Which apparently is really difficult to do. And I'll get to that. And then whenever you discard a card, you can flip a clue back over and get a new clue. And you can play 3 cards wrong. Like I play a card and it's not going to fit. We get a lightning bolt. And if you get the third lightning bolt, you're out.
Hmm.
And you're also out when the cards run out. So we're playing this game. I was having a good time, but it's super stressful, right? And Daniel Solis walks over and he looks and he's like, oh, you guys are doing really good. And I was like, because I was just thinking about how terrible we were doing in this game. And I was like, I thought we were doing bad. And he's like, dude, the max score is 25. You guys are at like 16 and you still have cards left. That's good.
Hmm.
I was like, oh, and we ended up with a score of 18, which I'm told is actually pretty great. Like, good job, guys. Good teamwork.
So you're like playing with the person across from you.
No, you're playing with everybody.
Oh.
You're all on a team.
Everyone
together.
Is all trying to get
fully cooperative, yeah.
Got it, okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
Yeah, it's just wicked fun. It's so stinking simple.
Yeah.
The game is just so simple.
Doesn't it drive you crazy?
It does.
Oh, it's just rage. things are so simple and so obvious sometimes, right. And you're just like, why couldn't I have that?
And it was cool. Another game I played, and I'm not going to go into much detail about this. It was a game that needed a theme, but it was a game Andy at Lennox designed, and it's a fighting game. I'll say that it's like a fighting game, a heads up card fighting game where you each have your own deck, but I believe the decks are exactly the same, and you just play back and forth. And what was so cool about this was we were just kind of hanging out on Sunday. We were tired of playing our own games. He said, "Hey, you want to play this game?" He's like, this game I designed. And I was like, sure, let's try it. You know, and he was kind of burnt out on the game because he felt like the theme, because he had come up with a theme that was supposed to be like samurais, I think, or kung fu. But the game just didn't feel like kung fu when you played it, not even a little bit. It was too technical and too, and like, we start playing the game and like, I immediately perked up. I'm like, because he describes this game and there's no theme. So I had a really hard time getting it at first, right? Because, you know, I'm a theme person. So like the theme helps me remember stuff.
And, right.
We as we go through and he's explaining it, we start to play and I'm like, this game is really fun. And then I was like, dude, this is one of the best games I've played here.
Wow.
And he was like, are you serious? Cause I thought I was not going to work on this. And I was like, this game is really good. And so we played it like 4 more times.
Oh, wow.
Like I kept being like, could we play it again? Do you mind? And he's like, no, that's cool. We can play it again.
So it was a 2-player?
Yeah, just 2-player. Okay. Heads 2-player. Up, back and forth. Yeah, and it was, it's really fun. You're trying to make combos and stuff, and there's like 4 different symbols, and those different symbols allow you to do different things. And I have a really hard time explaining how the game works, but just kudos to him. It's really good. And he's working on some theme ideas. And when he attaches a good theme to that game, it's going to be great.
Cool.
Because I think the theme will help him kind of refine it a little more.
Yeah.
It's going to be wicked fun. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Cool. Right on.
So that's what I've been playing. What about you?
Well, mainly just the prototype stuff that, you know, you and I have been doing the lunchtime playtests. And last week I promised that I would talk about the changes that we're thinking based on a lot of your feedback for Zombie Racing League. So, you know, the original idea was that you would have, you have your zombie. Your zombie, it's like turtle racing. You're rolling a die to see what your zombie does in the ring, right? Mm-hmm. And you roll your D8, and based on what number you get, he might just stand there and do nothing. He might turn left. He might turn right. He might step forward. He might go brains. Yeah. So, you can, as you win races or you get so far into the race, based on how far out from the center of the board you get so much money at the end of the game or at the end of the race, and you can spend that money to buy new techniques, basically fill in blank slots on your die to do more things during the race, or you can level up stats that will allow you to move farther or roll your dice more times or re-roll a die or something. Mm-hmm. Okay. So after the first playtest of that, it was clear that the stats thing just wasn't working. It just was not working at all. Because if you were leveling up your power to move farther, if you happened to roll a left turn and you were at power, if you stepped up your power once, you would turn a 180, you know? And if you level it up two times and you roll a left turn, well, it's basically a right turn because three times, you know, anyway. So the stats were working, and then the cost to upgrade them wasn't making any sense. In fact, there was no way for you to ever get enough money in the game to level up your stats all the way, and you didn't even make any sense to do that in the first place.
Right.
So, where we went to, the first thing was the first playtest. It was just your first race is just your zombie. Your zombie is your zombie is your zombie, and everybody starts with the same zombie, and you don't have anything special. You just roll your dice and you see what happens. And that was just boring because, you know, more than half the numbers on the die, five out of the eight, you would roll your die and nothing would happen.
Right.
You know, and so there was only, it was a 1 in 8 chance that your zombie would move, actually take a step forward, 2 in 8 chance that he would either just turn to the left, turn to the right, and it was boring. So the first change that I made was to give every player three money. Points to spend. Yep. So we'll call 3 gold. I don't know if it probably won't be gold, but let's say 3 gold. So at the start of the game, you have 3 gold to upgrade your zombie before you even do your first race. Okay. And so you can spend that gold to buy more techniques to add to your tableau to fill in some of those blank slots on your DA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And those techniques that are available for purchase are kind of drawn randomly out of a bag and are there for you. The next change that I made was to not have stats that you upgrade like a track. Instead, they're what you can buy are like one-time use items almost. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So you can instead of upgrading your power statistic higher and higher, what you can do is you can spend 1 gold to buy a one-time power boost.
Right.
Okay. And you could, if you have that in reserve, then you could use that one time. If you roll a number to make your zombie step forward, if you spend that power boost, instead of him stepping forward one, he can step forward two. Or if you roll a left turn and you actually want to make him turn around 180 degrees, you could spend a power boost to make him wheel around all the way, turn left twice, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of thing you can do. The next step was, rolling an extra die. So you can also spend something to make give you a fifth roll. Because in the base game, you can roll, in a race, you can roll your die 4 times. Okay?
Right.
And so you can spend one of these to roll a fifth time. So you get one extra move, one extra action during the race. And the third one, instead of giving you re-rolls, we talked this out a lot. Instead, we decided to make it a fudge power,
right?
Which allows you to basically you roll a die, and then if you want to spend the fudge power or the fudge item, you can change the number you just rolled up or down by 1 pip, basically 1 pip on the die.
Mm-hmm.
So if you rolled a 7 and you want to make it an 8, you can spend that, and now it's an 8, and you can do whatever that other action is. And that that was a way better way to approach it. So much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It works really well.
Really well. One of the next things that was done was there's still a chance, based on how you roll, that your zombie might just stand in the middle the whole time. Or right. he might walk out of the middle and then turn around and walk right back to the middle.
Right.
Which totally has happened. And that's really disappointing. And if you don't get at the end of the race, you're not out of the center, then you don't win any money. So, yeah. So to compensate for that, I said, well, if you end the race and you're still standing in the middle, you get a free random draw from the technique bag. Okay. Because it will say, well, your zombie learned something, you know.
Right.
Well, you figured something out just by milling around there. You, if nothing else, you watched the other zombies and what they were doing. So you get a free random draw from, you can't buy anything, right. but, you know, okay. So that's a way to help keep somebody from just getting stuck in the middle and floundering through the whole game.
And we could say that from playtesting that random draw can sometimes be awesome.
It can be super awesome.
Both of us once drew a forward
right.
in those random draws.
Right, which was great. Then the next thing that we said is I was thinking in a two-player game, if this was a full four-player game, at any given time there would be six techniques available for purchase.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a two-player game, it makes more sense just to have four things available for purchase. You don't have so many options, so that would change based on how many players. But sometimes there are things that you don't want any of the stuff out there. Okay, so instead of forcing you to buy one of those four that's available, you could alternatively spend a gold to take a random draw from the bag.
Right.
Okay. Which, you know, it's a roll of dice. You don't know what you're going to get, but you're going to get something you know you don't want what's out there. So you're going to hope for something better.
Right. I just had a thought, by the way, I want to interject here, because mm-hmm. we play tested this today.
Yeah.
And, you know, we ended up with four junk things out there.
Yeah.
What if every turn, since you've got four in a row, mm-hmm. the first one goes away and pushes the other two down and the next one comes out?
You can do that. I might want to say that at the start of a race, you just throw everything back in the bag. That might be just a simpler way to handle that. And you draw four new ones at the start of every
That's cool because
phase.
That makes people want to buy them. Yeah. Then. They don't want to wait.
Right. No guarantee it's going to be there next time.
I like that. That's good.
I think that might be a simpler way to approach
it. You could
that.
Still do a random draw, but
yeah. If you want to, but yeah, I think that might be a simpler approach.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. And then the last thing is that I had toyed with betting before. Right. And this has not been tested because I want to make sure that the actual race aspect of it is good and is working, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I've been struggling with how to put betting in there. Cause if it's kind of part of the idea is that people are betting on these races and you want to, as a player, you want to be able to bet on this too. But I was worried that there's not always going to be a winner to the race. You know, there's not always going to be one, the guy who's first to cross the finish line.
Right.
You know? So how can you put betting into that? And I was actually listening to Flip the Table and their episode on their VCR football game. and they did their Battle of the Wits. They were doing their over-under game where they give a number and then the guys playing the game have to say, is the true number over or under the number the host
right.
is throwing out? And I thought, oh man, that's the way to handle the betting. So the idea, and again, hasn't been tested at all yet, purely theoretical. The idea is that, you know, you have your training phase and you spec out your zombie stats, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then the training phase ends, and then now the race phase begins. At the beginning of the race phase, the first thing each player does is they put out a chit that says how far they think their zombie's going to get, okay? Uh-huh. Into, you know, row one, row two, row three, row four, whatever, okay? You put that out there and that is face up. Everybody can see that. Okay, and then what you do is after everyone's put their chits face up, now everybody puts out a secret bet. This is going to be a chit that'll be face down.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and they pick one of the four players to bet on. You can bet on your own zombie, or you can bet on someone else's zombie, and then you can choose over, under, or dead on. So you can say, I think that Jason's zombie is going to be he's going to go he's not he's going to be under his goal his target.
Right.
Right. Now, obviously, if you set your target. And you reach that target, you're going to get cash for that because you as the trainer are going to be rewarded for that zombie's performance.
Right.
But then if I bet on your zombie to be dead on or over under based on the results of that, I can win cash on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The cash that you can win from your target is going to be a preset amount, but the cash that you can win from a bet is going to be based on whatever you want to throw in the pot.
Right.
Right. So that's how I think I'm going to want to handle betting in that. And I think that'll be a simpler way to handle that.
Sounds like it would work.
Yeah. I don't see why it wouldn't. Of course, we won't know until we test it.
I'll be interested to see how it works.
Yeah.
I think it'll work, but it'll be interesting to see it in mm-hmm. action next time we play.
Yeah. The outstanding question that I still have on that is what do you do if two zombies are going to move into the same space?
Well, you know who goes first.
Yeah.
Based on
the number they roll.
So I think just the second one gets blocked.
What if both people roll the same number and move into the same space at the same time is the next question. Does
if
one
that
guy not
happens,
knock down?
I think they both fall down and stay in the same space they're in. Like, really hose them. Because that rarely happens.
It's pretty rare. Okay, I'm fine with that.
It's simple.
Right? Yeah, okay.
You're both going. If you're tied, you fall down.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
I mean, there are zombies.
Yeah. All right, so there you go. That's my update on Zombie Racing League. Pretty happy with the changes and the growth of that so far. Holy cow, I took a long time to talk about
that.
Yeah,
we should probably move into the feature of the week.
Feature
Luckily,
week.
This will be a shorter feature. So.
Yeah. This is going to be our post-mortem, or I should say my post-mortem on Rumpelbum Academy.
Right.
Yeah.
Not that it's dead, but...
Oh, no.
I mean, it's kind of went through its steps...
Yeah.
And now is in a position where it's sitting, and things can happen with it. But in general,
yeah,
it's kind of taken its arc,
right?
And now is available.
So just to remind everybody, I put that together kind of in a rush, to meet the deadline for a microgame challenge on the Game Crafter. So this is kind of a postmortem on what I learned in developing that game, and also about putting a shop together for Rumpel or for
Rumpelbum.
Game Crafter. Yeah.
On Rumpelbum. Rumpelbum on Game Crafter.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm still very happy with the way the game plays. I think it's a solid game. It's a very simple game. It's for a young audience. It was intended for a young audience. So it's not a complex game for gamers. I think it's fun to play, but
yeah,
it's pretty simple. I spent a lot of time on the artwork, doing the character designs and the bug designs and the card layouts and everything. And I'm very happy with the way that turned out. But that was a lot of work, and it was a lot of work under pressure to get it in by the deadline date. And so by the time I got all the cards done and the rules done, I was running low on time to do my box art
right. And
to put together artwork for the shop page on Game Crafter. And so I kind of rushed that, and I didn't put the time and attention into that that I originally wanted to, that I should have,
right?
You know, but I just wanted it to be done for the contest.
Because the thing was, you had to have a copy printed and sent to you so you can get action shots of it.
Exactly, right? Yeah,
which I feel like is kind of lame for the contest.
And I learned after the fact, a lot of contestants didn't do that. What they did is they took the artwork and they just did screen prints of the artwork, or what they would do is they would apply the images as textures on a 3D model of the box, and you know, a 3D plane of a card, and then they would render out a quick image of that with lighting and shading. And if you know what you're looking at, you know clearly that's a 3D rendering, it's not an actual photo.
Right.
But Game Crafter, again, we talked about this before, Game Crafter has these contests not to pick the best game, but to drive traffic to their site and get more content so people will buy more stuff from them.
Right. And you can't blame them. And it's helping people win.
It is helping people.
They're getting
right.
stuff,
so there's no hard feelings on that. What it does mean, though, is that you need to understand that their rules are pretty loose on these contests.
Right.
So that kind of stuff was not policed at all. Anyway, so that's lesson learned there. Okay. So that hurt me. That hurt me. The box art being a little unimpressive. The shop page artwork and not really understanding how that was all going to come together hurt me, and not picking the best imagery for that hurt me. Likewise, I should have done a YouTube video showing how you play the game, how one round of the game works.
Right.
Didn't do that. Didn't know that was a good idea. So didn't have that. So too bad on that. Those are things that meant that I didn't get any attention for the game. Okay, no YouTube video, no gameplay instructions, no fancy flashy shop cover page. That meant people looked at it and went, "Oh, that's neat," and then looked away. And I can say that for sure because I have some stats. One thing that GameCrafter is great about is giving you stats.
Yeah.
On how your game is doing.
Pretty impressive, like, right. amount of stats to look right. at.
So I checked this yesterday. So these numbers from yesterday, I don't imagine they've changed at all. So it tells me that 613 people have looked at my game page.
Which is that's a big number.
I think that's a lot. I mean, considering, I don't know how much traffic GameCrafter gets, but all things considered, I think that's a lot of numbers. That's a lot of people looking at it.
Feels good, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Of those 613, 12 people have, they call it nibbles, but what that means, I've 12 nibbles, it means 12 people have put the game into their shopping cart but not bought it.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
So if they come back to the site, it'll be in their cookies, basically. 8 copies have been sold. So 8 copies of the game have been purchased, printed, sent out. Okay. My first thought was, okay, 8 copies, that's not so bad. All right, well, though 2 of those I bought for myself.
Right, well, so now you're 6.
One of them was a copy I bought for myself. One of them was a copy that I bought to send to a reviewer.
Right.
To send. Hopefully it'll be a video review of Rumplebum coming up soon on YouTube from him. One copy was sold to you. Thank yes. you very much.
No problem.
One copy is sold to our friend Laura, who also helped me with playtesting.
Right.
Okay. One copy was to my wife's cousin's boyfriend up in Grand Rapids, who also helped with playtesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So thank you to Chris for buying that. At least, well, it was a copy sold to somebody in Grand Rapids. I don't know for sure it was Chris. I didn't get a specific name, but I'm assuming it was to Chris.
Right.
Okay. 2 copies were to someone in North Carolina. My cousin lives in North Carolina, and he also playtested it with me and said that he would probably buy a couple copies for Christmas to give to his nieces. So presumably those were to my cousin Brian. Okay. And then 1 copy was to Chris Mayfield in St. Louis. It was to a guy in St. Louis, and then Chris Mayfield, a listener of the show and a guy that I've chatted with off and on Twitter, he tweeted at me saying, hey, I got a copy of the game, and he liked it very, very much. I think he bought it for his daughter for Christmas.
Oh, cool.
So thank you again, Chris, for doing that. So I break all that down. 1 out of 8 copies was to somebody who was not a close friend or family who was involved in playtesting.
The good news is they were a listener of the show.
Yeah, which is fantastic.
Which means without the show, you'd have sold 0 copies.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Yeah. So maybe after this review comes out, I might get a little bump. I don't know. We'll see. So, so those are kind of bummer numbers about Rumplebum. So lessons learned from that. Like I said, YouTube video, better artwork for the shop page.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For the storefront, essentially. I have revised my box art since then. And I'm very, very happy with the box art with the new version. It looks like a textbook instead of it looking like a yeah. bad collage.
I like it.
Yeah. I haven't had time to revise artwork on the shop page because I've been working Watermelon Washout stuff. So hopefully I'll be able to get back to that and fix that soon. And then review copies.
Right.
If I really want to sell stuff, I'm going to have to spend some money and buy copies and send them out to reviewers.
Right.
So, yeah. So GameCrafter, that's a thing. There's a lot of stuff on GameCrafter.
And that's one of the things you have working against you. There's exactly. a lot of stuff. And there are some people on GameCrafter that are pretty popular.
Yeah.
Because they've done a lot with GameCrafter. They've won right. some contests right. and things. So people buy their stuff. And you still don't know what their numbers are. Their numbers also might not be that impressive.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Right. We don't know.
But... Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, you'd like the numbers to be better than that.
Right.
Listeners, you could help that, but no pressure.
Well, it's only $10.99, guys. I don't make any money off of that.
Right. Literally.
That's like, basically cost. Like I get 40 cents of store credit for every copy sold.
Man, just ripping people off.
Yeah. Actually, I don't think I've even been credited any of my store credit yet. I don't know when that happens or how that happens.
But yeah, I mean, I think... It's discouraging, right?
It's a bummer.
But
it's a bummer.
That said, you know, I mean, again, there's so much on GameCrafter that it's like...
It's hard to stand out. It's really hard to stand out.
It is. So yeah. I think having kind of that fun theme should help just because it you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. when there's a sea of things, anything to help make it stand out is great.
Yeah. Yeah. So if anybody else out there is approaching GameCrafter to try and do, you know, don't expect it to explode. Don't expect to make millions of dollars off of it. You know, expect it to sit there with not a lot happening.
Sit there and look pretty.
You know, if you're going to do that, make sure that you're making the game, number one, for yourself.
Right.
Okay. Make sure that it's a game that you are enjoying, that you're really having fun putting together.
Right.
Because you're going to have it's going to be a steep hill to climb to break out from the crowd.
Right. And I mean, if you really enjoy doing that stuff and putting those games out there and publishing stuff that way yourself,
go for it.
Awesome. Do
go
it.
Go for it.
That's great.
Go for it. Yeah. And great. I will still continue to put stuff on GameCrafter. Don't think that this is discouraging me or turn me off. This is just lessons that I've learned that I wanted to share with you guys.
Revised your expectations.
Absolutely. And I think I can do a better job next time.
And not that you thought you were going to sell like 1,000 copies of it or anything.
No. I'd hope for, 10 or 15.
Right.
But we'll see.
To not us. Yeah.
And it's not like it's going to go away.
Right. It'll be there forever. Until GameCrafter closes or kicks you off for some reason.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows? But yeah.
So maybe for ragging on their contest.
Well, they'll show you.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. So anyway,
that'll actually be bad because we order a lot of prototypes. We do, stuff, right? So please don't get robbed.
I actually just ordered another deck of cards from them to help me prototype Aftermath.
Cool.
So hopefully I'll be putting a prototype of that together in a few weeks.
Excellent.
Okay. So.
Yeah, I think it's time to practice the pitch.
I can do that.
It's your turn.
Yeah, so here's the deal. I realized at about 3:30 this afternoon that I was going to have to pitch a game tonight.
Well, because we were going to have Scott King on. So,
right.
But and then that didn't work Scott out. Got bumped because of Rob's car problems.
Right. And so I had to last minute come with a game design. And so I threw this together. It's kind of a dumb idea. It's silly, but I don't know. It could work. It's a solo game. And I don't think I've ever done a solo game before.
I don't think so.
No, we talked about this a few weeks ago. I snow is on our minds, right? There's a lot of it outside. A lot of snow.
It's everywhere.
A lot of snow. And so I thought it'd be fun to maybe try and come up with a design about a snowplow. Okay. About driving a snowplow.
Yeah.
And I mean, the first thing I thought was, a little kid's game. You have a bunch of tiles that are out face down. Every kid has a snowplow, and you move forward and you flip a tile and you want to collect sets of certain. On the other side of the tile are things like, a penguin or I don't know, fire hydrant or a car or what, things that you uncover in the snow as you're plowing.
Yeah. Penguins. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Cause that's what you uncover.
It's in the for snow. Kids, and the kid, you want to get two. And if the first kid to get three sets of two or whatever, I don't know. Anyway, and you could, that's a game. There it is. The whole game done, piece of cake. You just need some artwork. You can make that and you can sell that to kids. But I wanted to do something more interesting.
At least one copy.
At least one copy to me. I thought, I could do better than that. I could do better than that. Let me see what I can go with. So I was thinking back. I like reality shows, just garbage reality shows. And there's this show called Snowmen, I think. It's about a group of it's a Discovery Channel show about people who their entire career is to clear the section of road in Colorado leading from a town to a ski resort, like the most dangerous road in the winter in the entire country for avalanches and stuff. It's got like 500 avalanche zones along this stretch of road, and every winter it gets all snowed in and they gotta plow. Anyway, super dangerous. Who knows? At least they made it sound dramatic for the TV show. I think I watched the first episode and it was so terrible I turned off. But so I thought, what if we could do like a serious snowplow game, about driving your snowplow to clear the road, the dangerous road,
Yeah, snowplows.
Okay. Snowplows. I don't have a name for it, but whatever.
Call it snowplows. That's what you call it.
Yeah. All right. So, so this is a card game. Okay, it's a solo card game, and there are two decks of cards. There's the truck deck, and there's the road deck. Okay. The road deck is cards that have obstacles, things that are in your way, while you're on the road. And it might just be snow. It might be a rock. It might be a stalled car. Whatever.
Right.
Okay, stuff. Tree falling down, whatever. Okay. And then the truck deck is, let me come back to the truck deck. Okay.
Okay.
So, you start the game with three resources, with three different types of resources. All right. You're leaving your home base. Okay. You got a full tank of gas. You've got, your truck is in really good condition. So tip top shape, and you're warm. You're all warm and toasty as the driver. Okay. And so You start the game and you have a big card or a big thing in front of you with those three stats on it, and there's a counter, and it goes from 0 to 20. Okay? So you start with 20 gas, 20 condition, and 20 warmth. That means everything's maxed out, ready to go. Okay? And then
fully loaded.
And then you draw 8 cards from the truck deck. Maybe 7, whatever. We'll see what that number should be. Okay, from the truck deck. And each of those cards allows you, if you play that card, it allows you to increase one of those stats. Like maybe it's a thermos of coffee. So if you put down a thermos of coffee card, it's going to allow you to increase your driver's warmth.
That makes sense.
Right? If it's low, you drink coffee, you warm up again. Okay, maybe it's a brand new ratchet set. You know, so you can use that the handy, fresh, good tools to improve the condition of your truck. Okay, so your truck will run better. Maybe it's a jerry can of gas. You can refill your gas tank while you're on the road. Okay, so there are ways you can increase your stats, your resources. The road deck. Then every time you flip over a card from the road deck, it's an obstacle. Okay, and it's going to cost you a certain number of resources to get past that obstacle in the road.
Okay.
So the game is played by you want to get to the end of the road. You want to clear the entire road, plow the entire road. So the game ends when you get through the whole deck of road cards. All right. So the first card you flip over, in order to move on to that piece of road, you have to spend resources.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there might be one, two, or three resources that you have to spend to clear out that road card. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're spending those resources. You can play your truck cards anytime you want to mitigate the resources that you're spending.
Makes sense.
All right. Okay. Now, if the condition of your truck is getting low, if it's getting damaged, you can spend warmth points to get out of the truck and fix it. Okay. That every time you sense. Get out of the truck, you're going to get cold. You know.
Yeah.
So you spend. So basically, you can move warmth points from warmth to condition to improve the condition of your truck.
Totally makes sense. Yeah.
When you get back in the truck, you're cold. If you want to increase your warmth, you got to turn up the heat, and it's going to cost gas. So you can move gas points from gas to warmth.
Okay.
Okay. To warm up your guy. But there's no way to replenish gas points.
Right.
Unless you're going to play a truck card to refill your gas tank. Okay. So as you're going further along the road, you're running out of points. Okay. Every time something happens to do damage to your truck, you know, you hit a pothole or something, every time you lose a point of condition, you have to roll a d20.
Okay.
So if you have your full 20, you roll d20, you're always going to make your target. But if you roll a point, then you have to roll your die. Okay. And you have to roll. So I would want to, if I'm going to lose point number 20, I would have to roll a 19 or under. Okay.
Okay.
Which I can probably do, you know. If I don't do that, then the car stalls, or then the truck breaks down. Okay?
Okay,
and then I have to spend a warmth point to fix the truck, and then re-roll.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then re-roll. So if I get to a point where, you know, my condition of my truck is degraded down to 10, it's 50-50 shot whether I'm going to succeed at this.
Right.
You know, and I have to re-roll after every time I move a point over there, and depending on how I roll, it might be a really serious breakdown. Mm-hmm. You know. Okay. All right. Now periodically, you might be able to pull over to a rest stop or at a gas station or something, right? So at some point within the road deck, there will be a few turnoff cards that will come up. If one of those comes up, you can draw additional truck cards to your hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the catch is, for every truck card you draw to your hand, you have to add another road card to the road deck. Because as you're sitting there warming up or refilling your gas tank, conditions are worsening outside.
Right.
Okay. So every time you have to, you pick up another truck card to your hand, which is going to give you some kind of bonus later to improve your stats, it's also going to put another obstacle in your way. It's going to make it harder for you to finish clearing this road. So you have to decide how many times you're going to do that, how many more bonuses you're going to give yourself.
Right.
And you're going to risk getting some more real bad obstacles in your way.
That's cool.
Okay. And so the goal is to get through to the end of the deck before you run out of gas, before you die a frostbite, or before your truck breaks down and you can't get anywhere. And that's basically the game.
That's cool. I mean, So there's a good deal of randomness, right?
Yeah, with a shuffle of the decks.
Shuffle of the deck for mm-hmm. the cards, shuffle the deck for the roads.
Right. You can judge difficulty by how many cards you put into the road deck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's scalable for that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think what I'm thinking is there would be, 20 points of each stat. So it's a total of 60 points of resource points you start the game with. The truck deck would have another 60 points of resources available in the truck deck.
Mm-hmm.
The total road deck would be 120 points of resources in the entire road deck. And then I think an average game, you would play 100 cards. Okay. So basically you would deal out 20 cards and shuffle the rest.
That makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
And that way you still have somewhere to draw upon if you're drawing truck cards.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to think of ways to tweak that, but I think that would be, obviously not overly complex.
Yeah.
But that would be a fun solo game to try.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really dig the theme with it. I think that the theme is kind of fun.
Really? I think that's kind of the dumbest part.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I like snow themes. I mean, I designed a snowball fight game.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
I like snow themes, but... yeah, I mean, I think certainly you could add a theme that was a little more mainstream that would make the game feel more
mm-hmm.
something. I don't know. So,
yeah.
I was just trying to think of ways to mitigate the randomness a little bit more. Things that you could control that would, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But off the top of my head, unless there was a reason that there could be two roads. And you could choose which one, you know, mm-hmm. like there were two obstacle cards put out at any time.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a risk reward thing. So like there was always two paths you could take
mm-hmm.
or not always, maybe
sometimes. You yeah. know. You know, one thing that originally I was thinking of it as a board game and you would be moving your pawn along a track and occasionally the road would branch
uh-huh.
off the track. And sometimes you could take that branch to go to a gas station, you know, to get, uh-huh. to get more truck cards, or there would be two routes through the thing. But realistically I was thinking, you know, to do a branch to go pull off the road to a gas station, then go back onto the road. That makes sense. But branching roads, you know, generally with a snowplow, you want to go from point A to point B and you have a specific route you have to follow, you know?
Right. That's true.
Which was kinda, the theme kind of made me think that was probably wasn't a good idea. And then if it was just truly just a one track, I thought, well, then why do I even need the board? Why don't I just do it all with cards?
Yeah, I would just do it. I mean, I think cards makes way more sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a small enough game that I think having like a board would be mm-hmm. a detriment to it.
Yeah. So, you know, 180 cards total is what I've got right now.
Cool.
So,
yeah.
That's the idea.
It's a lot of cards.
It is a lot of cards. I know, for a solo game.
I said
game,
cool and then was like, did he just say 180?
Yeah, after maybe the truck deck should be a lot smaller. I mean, maybe it should. Everything should be a lot smaller, right, you know. 100 cards in the road deck might be way too long.
Yeah, it very well could be.
So, and even, you know, and I was thinking 20 resource points for your truck. Maybe that should only be 10 to start with for each resource at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
I just thought a D20 is nice to roll, you know.
D10s work too, though.
But yeah, right. So...
cool.
So that's the idea. I think it's a solid idea for being thrown together in about an hour and a half.
I enjoy that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's fun to kind of put that stress upon us now and then.
It is. It is. I like that, too.
But I feel like I could come up with a better name than Snowplow.
Oh, yeah, I hope you could.
Yeah. Like, it should name the road, name the mountain pass or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
Something mountain pass might be fun, though, or yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, there you go. I think it'd be also really easy to put together for Game Crafter, because if I could just, you know, go to Morgue File and find a bunch of royalty-free images,
right?
You know, it'd be totally easy to throw together.
Maybe they, maybe they'll have a solo game challenge coming up here.
Maybe keep that in the back pocket.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, there you go. Snowplow.
Cool.
Yeah. That's what I got.
All right.
Okay.
We have one question that we skipped from last week. We said we'd get to this week, which was Ben Pinchback asked what was going on with...
Beyond the Street.
So I can give a quick summary of that.
Yes, please.
So, you know, the consensus from gamers was this game needs to be a little more gamey. Didn't have a lot of decisions. In fact, the lowest rating I would get was... because you could get 1 to 5 on your ratings, and that game got 4s and 5s consistently, except for in decisions, which it got a solid 3. Which to me says you don't have enough decision choices.
And they were being nice about that 3.
Yeah, I mean, it probably was like a 2. Because the idea is you get the last word, so it's like kind of like a reverse trick-taking type thing, where, you know, to take the trick, you just need the last card.
Yeah.
And that's cool. I like that. I'm going to hold on to that mechanic. Well, I was going to hold on to that mechanic, and I'm going to change it a little bit. But, you know, then we decided to add the busted cards to try and make it a little more strategic. The biggest thing I noticed, though, when playing it was people got tired of, like, by round three, people were kind of done. Like, they're having fun, but, like, the rounds take a while. Mm. So, like, one thing I did that I only tried one playtest with but made a huge difference was I cut it down to five cards instead of seven. You get five cards. Plays way faster that way. People liked that, especially in a bigger player games. But now, to make it a little more gamey, and this is something that came from our 12-hour car ride again, I'm going to add new cards called remix cards. And the idea is there's four lines that you can play raps in. In those four that you can play rhymes in, sorry. You would get a seed card that would be the first card in every line, just to kind of make it easy. And then you could play in any of those lines. And the lines could only have four cards in them, right? So 16 cards at a time on the board, max. That wouldn't happen very often. The idea is as you build these lines, you want to make them rhyme. So like, you want to make the last word of two rhymes rhyme, right? Does that make sense? Okay. So like I'd play a remix card and that would either let me swap two cards or discard a card and play another one of my own, right? And now these two lines rhyme. I rap them out loud. Mm-hmm. They rhyme and then I take them off the board and I score one cred for that. Okay. Boom. So I got a cred for that. And now they get two more seeds out there to set that up. And that's the game. The game is one round now, right? It's all played at the same time. And the strategy comes from trying to use the remixes. Hmm. You know, you might have a card in your hand and be like, I don't want to play that on the board because somebody's going to be able to remix it to do that. You can always skip your turn to trash your hand and get new. Sorry, you can spend a cred, one cred, to trash your hand and get a new card. Okay. I think everybody would start with two cred. And then, in addition to that, the busted cards now, those are the ranked cards where, you know, like, if you play a one, then anybody can play a two or higher. But if you play a seven, that's the top one, no more can be played. I would bump that up probably to 10, because I'm going to make the deck 90 cards, so that there's more rhymes in there.
Okay.
And then, in addition to that, so if I play, you want to try and frame the rhymes with busted cards. So, like, I want to try and frame one line with two busted cards, right? So I can, if I play a five on the left, that means that I can play a six or seven, six through 10 on the right.
Okay.
Anybody can, but does that mean you say, follow me there?
Mm-hmm.
So if I play a one on the right, no one's ever going to be able to make that.
Yeah.
But what'll happen is when those lines clear, because somebody made a rhyme, that's going to go away. So you can kind of do it to like sabotage people. But once you play that first one on the left, the only thing that can be played on the right is a higher number.
Mm.
So that's kind of how it's ranked. And if that happens, you get a cred. So like if on my turn I play a rank three and then it comes back around to me and I play a rank five on the right, boom, that was my breakdance little interlude. I get a cred cube for that. You played a five cred. The game should now only take 15 to 20 minutes tops. So added more strategy, made the game faster, made more replayability. I still have to test it, but I feel pretty good about that.
Okay. Right on.
People like to play this game standing up, I've noticed, too.
Oh, yeah? Well, you got to get into it, you know?
Right. Really appreciate it.
If you're rapping, you got to get the hands in there, you know?
So.
Yeah.
That was the only question we had.
Right on.
But I wanted to get into that. We missed it last time.
So I really want to play that again.
Me, too. I really want to play it and record it for the,
yeah,
for
we
the show.
Yeah, we really need to do that. Yeah. We've got to do that soon.
So. Yeah. But I think that's all we got.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. That's all that we have for tonight. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I am @poorly_designed. And you can like us on Facebook, and you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can also remember to watch Something from Nothing, our bi-weekly video Google Hangout show. Me and Jason and our buddies Chevy and TC and whatever game designer friends we can come up with for the evening, we'll hang out every other Sunday night at 8 o'clock Eastern time, talk about games we're working on and game design in general. We'll take questions from the Twitterverse during the live show and look forward to a podcast stream of that coming soon.
Hopefully. Possibly out by now. So.
Possibly out by now. Yeah, we've been saying that for about a month now, I think.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I submitted something to iTunes, so some steps we forgot existed. Yeah. So Chevy's working on his side to get that done. And
right on.
Yeah.
So, and remember that if we can get to 1,000 followers on Twitter, we have a super exciting, extra special free game to give away.
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We're not saying what it is, but it's a good'un.
Yep.
It is a good'un. Is that it?
I think that's it.
That's it. All right. Good night.
Good night.
Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Good evening, Rob. Good evening, Rob. Good evening, Rob.
I'm drinking beer.